afternoon.
Welcome to Why Is This a Thing? Our December holiday celebration. Christmas celebration? Holiday celebration?
It's Christmas celebration.
It's a war on Christmas!
What do we say to not offend anybody?
I saw a great tweet that was like, "Dearest Margaret, I am on the front lines fighting the good fight against happy holidays." Yours from the war on Christmas. The war on Christmas. Man, that was fun back when a controversy.
I think we've talked about this before, or comedians have talked about this before, but...
Everyone has. Everyone.
Well, no. Here's... Yeah.
This is the least unique take, but I'm going to let you make it anyway. Go ahead.
No. It's greater than just the Christmas thing. It's we just get, like, upset about things that are meant to be nice.
Yes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, right.
I think it was Daniel Tosh forever ago. I don't want to say he was ahead of his time because nobody knows who he is anymore. But
yep.
He forever ago had this joke about, like, he said "bless you" to someone who sneezed, and they're like, "I'm an atheist." It's like, are you kidding me? Come on.
No, I agree. Just like if anyone gets offended by someone saying like "Merry Christmas" to you, they're wishing like good faith and you know good stuff upon you. They're not saying like "go fuck yourself" or anything. Like there's nothing wrong with saying "Merry Christmas." Like, it's a nice thing to say to somebody.
It's meant to be kind.
Yes.
And if someone responds, "Hey, you know, I'm Jewish, but thank you for saying that."
Yeah.
Then you might respond, "I'm so sorry. Happy Hanukkah."
Sure.
But would they
and
even...
And that's fine. Now, if they say, "I'm Jewish, I don't celebrate Christmas," and they say, "Merry fucking Christmas," and they just keep going, yeah, then you're kind of being a dick.
"Merry fucking Christmas, you Jew."
No, but I
yeah, that would be rude.
Yeah, that would be a bit rude. No, but I've said this because maybe this is, you know, coming from an American Judeo-Christian perspective, but if you came up to me and said, "Hey, Nico, happy Kwanzaa," I'd be like, "Yeah, dude, thanks.
That'd be kind of cool.
Happy Kwanzaa to you."
But maybe the issue is that doesn't happen.
No, perhaps that is the case. But again, like, wish me your happy Hanukkah. Absolutely.
I would actually be kind of stunned if that happened. I'd be like happy because it's so surprising. I'd be like,
yeah,
whoa.
I think the idea is that Christmas is so normalized, right?
Yes.
And the other holidays aren't. And, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with that point of view, that's sort of like...
Okay.
Sort of problematic, but that doesn't mean we have to ban the words "Merry Christmas." I think we just should acknowledge that there are also other holidays. I mean, just walk that line, you know?
Well, I agree, though, but then the people who do that are just angry at the wrong thing, though.
Right.
They shouldn't be angry.
That's my point.
Yeah, they shouldn't be angry at the fact that someone's saying "Merry Christmas." You know, that the essence of that is fine, but they should be like, well, you know, I take that and I'm going to go and use that and say "Happy Kwanzaa" now. You know, don't get mad at "Merry Christmas."
Wish me anything.
Yeah, sure.
Smile at me.
Come up.
And listen, any human interaction I am totally into.
Come up to me when it's not my birthday and say "Happy birthday."
Whatever you want to say. I'm not going to be offended at your kindness.
You guys have been wished "Happy birthday" on the wrong day, right?
Of course.
Yes.
It makes you feel good, doesn't it?
It's the best.
Sure.
Like, even
best.
If it's not actually my birthday, and like, hey, you got your facts wrong, but I appreciate that you thought of it.
No, exactly. They put in the effort. I mean, that's what matters.
You thought it was my birthday, and you still wished it upon me.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course.
You know, and for all you know, maybe they're just early, you know? I'm wishing you a happy birthday when it comes around.
Right. I may not see you in 6 months. Got to get you ahead of time. Yeah, that happy. The only thing that annoys me, I'll tell you the one thing that irritates me. Just one. When you wish me a happy new year in February.
Ooh.
One time.
That can get, yeah. I can
if
get that,
if
yeah.
you're past the statute of limitations on the happy new year, irritates me. First week, it's a new year. By February, we're already in the year. It's not a new year anymore. It's the current year.
No, it's still a technic. It's a new year. It's still.
I don't like it.
I could be saying happy new year right now. Happy
I
New
say
Year,
one,
Nico.
One lunar cycle. Yeah. That's all you get.
You get a one lunar cycle statute of limitations. Absolutely.
Yeah. Ooh, that's actually a good, like that's sort of a plot hole in the whole New Year definition. Because isn't it always after New Year?
Sure.
Sure. It's like Gremlins. It's kind of, yeah, it's the same same idea, right?
Yeah, you can't feed them after midnight.
But it's always after midnight. So
when does that cut off?
Oh, good point.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, there is no cut. No, I think we should establish the cutoff. I like the one lunar cycle. I'm in on that.
I like it because it's kind of archaic and like people have to like Google search what that means. Like I know everybody knows it's roughly a month, but exactly how long? You know, if you're on January 30th, you go, shit, am I still in the lunar cycle? I got to check.
Could you imagine keeping time by the lunar cycle?
No.
Like if we didn't have calendars.
Yeah, can you imagine being a woman and having to do that? No.
Jesus.
Could you imagine if the moon made you bleed from your privates?
Well, that's not what I meant, but...
Yes, it is.
It's like the tides. The tides are caused by the moon as well. It's
in
just
my
all
head,
flowing
it sounded
liquid.
Like you were being a man, being like, wow, I've never thought of this. And I was thinking, I'm like, women think like that all the time.
Okay, well, it
just
says
one
something
more
about...
thing that they do better than us is really where I was trying to go with that, but it kind of fell flat.
I love how it's the first thing Nico and I think of, just women's periods.
No, see, I was trying to defend the women, and now I came out sounding sexist. It's, it's just my luck.
Too late.
You can't win nowadays. We're all sexist. There's nothing we can
do. Too late. Man, we're getting very, like, socially conscious today. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm not in favor of this at all.
It's always... The ratings, I think, always go down when you get too socially conscious, you know? We got to be careful about
that. That's a great point.
Yeah.
The day I start caring about the ratings, just kill me.
This is one thing I really loved about the Oscars last year was that they just cut all that bullshit out because it was such a thorn in their side because everyone was like, we can't stand this.
Right.
We're sick of it.
Yeah, they just streamlined the whole thing.
Yeah. I love that though. I love that people actually spoke up about that bullshit. It was nice.
By the way, let's never refer to the podcast ratings ever again.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, I checked the Nielsen data last
week. We don't have enough data to have ratings.
Okay. Let's do this. You ready, folks?
Oh, I'm pumped.
You are pumped, Nick.
Oh, I wonder if Nico's going to play a song.
I had it queued up, but I forgot to do it. Okay,
oh, boy,
and here
it
is.
What could it be? Oh, Jingle Bells.
By Michael Bublé.
So,
song's a fucking banger.
A few months ago,
oh my god,
I saw this trailer for a movie. Actually, the internet witnessed this trailer for a movie.
Yes,
starring Emilia Clarke, directed by Paul Feig, and written by Emma Thompson.
Strangely,
yeah, and also starring Emma Thompson in a bit part. Right. And it's called Last Christmas. And
who's Emma Thompson? Really quick,
Emma Thompson plays the mother.
The mother.
Yes.
Gotcha. Yeah. Cool.
And I think Academy Award winner? I think so.
I do think so.
Yeah. An occasional screenwriter. She's not like a huge screenwriter. I think she actually wrote the Nanny McPhee movies.
You might be right, actually, yeah.
Yeah. But the trailer was pretty innocuous for the most part. Like, it was just sort of your standard Hallmark Christmas shit, but Paul Feig directs, so it's maybe a slight step above Hallmark.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's this title card in the trailer that says based on the song by George Michael. And I think that was the moment where the internet said, what the fuck is this?
See, okay.
I never saw that.
Because I had heard this too.
Right.
And I had no idea what that even meant.
Exactly. Because no one knew what it meant.
It's like, what do you mean it's based off of the song? And oh boy, did the movie inform me.
Oh boy, was it based on the song?
Yeah, it was.
But what we did not realize is just how based on the song it was. It was not a loose adaptation. It was word for word based on the song.
Talk about taking things literally, by the way.
It was a strict adaptation. It was not season 7 of Game of Thrones. It was season 3 of Game of Thrones, motherfucker. Every moment. Every moment, word for word, based on the song. And the internet speculated on this. And unfortunately, I was not spoiled on the movie. I did not read any reviews of the movie or anything like that. But the speculation inadvertently spoiled the twist.
They were spot on.
They were spot on. And I ended up texting it to Nick before I saw it, and I was 100% right.
Okay, see, yeah. I did not hear any of the speculation, so I went I went in completely cold.
Right.
Which is, I think, the correct way to go.
Yes, yes.
I think certainly. It was much more enjoyable that way than I think it would have been from Nico's perspective.
I can honestly say it's nice to see a movie where I didn't see the twist coming, for better or for worse.
Like, I don't want to say I saw it coming, because I didn't, but I sort of suspected something was up. Like,
oh yeah, no, certainly.
Something was suspect, and I knew the song, and in my head I'm like, you know, there's something here. But part of it is because they didn't overly inundate the point of her having open heart surgery too early on.
Right.
They just kind of hinted around she had something going on.
Yes.
If they told you it was an open heart surgery early on, you would have figured out exactly what the movie was all about.
So, spoilers ahead for Last Christmas. It is currently in a theater near you. Go yeah. see it if you want to see it, but we're going to spoil the shit out of this movie today.
Oh, my yep. God.
Yes, we are. Fuck yeah, we are.
Okay. Nick, you saw this last week. You were very yeah. excited when you saw it, so you yeah. now have the floor. Get everything off your chest. Go.
No, I was enchanted. I loved it every bit.
Oh my God!
After I left the movie theater, I geeked out with some like 16-year-old coffee barista girl at the mall that I saw the movie at about the movie.
Some random girl.
What? I went to buy a coffee, and I told she like, "Did you see a movie?" Because I had a soda in my hand. I'm like, yeah, I saw Last Christmas. She's like, "Oh, I loved it." I'm like, oh my God, me too. And then I think I freaked her out with how
that
excited
right
I was
there
about
is
it.
A Hallmark movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Where you emerge from the theater and you gallop to the Starbucks as everyone around you joins you in dance, having just seen Last Christmas as well. That's a Hallmark movie.
Well, I think I freaked her out with how much I liked it.
Did she?
By the end.
So
I think
you
she
were,
was like,
you were
that
more,
guy was weird.
You were more enthusiastic than the Starbucks barista?
Or more enthusiastic than she thought I should be.
Oh, okay. I see.
Which, I don't know.
She's probably right. But even still, what an experience this movie was.
No, I really enjoyed it. It's the main thing to me that really stands out is that I was expecting it to be like just a Christmas romance plot, and it turns into more of a take on the importance of like self-responsibility.
Yeah.
Self-growth, and briefly touches upon mental health without being like, you know, overbearing about it, you know, without depressing the shit out of you because it's a Christmas movie.
It's a little random, that mental health aspect, I guess. A little random.
Well, okay, so you
it's
have...
Not, and it's not mental health with her hallucinating. I don't... well, I'm not going to go there because I'm going to cap that. I'm going to cap that to Christmas magic. I'm talking about the mental health of, like, the rut she was in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, a lot of this is the product of the title being developed before the movie.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
No doubt.
So they sort of shoehorned those themes into it. I just couldn't get over... you know, Emma Thompson in a writer's room with whoever she wrote this movie with.
Yeah.
And they're there. And again, I don't know who came up with the idea of basing it off of the song.
Well, she wrote it with George Michael, right?
No.
George Michael is long gone.
I'm saying, but she wrote it with him.
well,
technically, yes.
I do love how the credits at the beginning said composed by George Michael, as though he had any say in the matter.
Right.
That happens a lot. You'd be surprised how frequently they credit dead composers and whatnot.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Composed just, by Bach.
Yeah, they played five of his songs, and that means that he composed it.
I love it when Shakespeare adaptations come out and it says written by William Shakespeare.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I just imagine them in a writer's room, though, when they figured out that twist.
Mm-hmm.
When they and the aha eureka moment. Where they just shook hands and high-fived and chest-bumped, and they're like, fuck yeah! We figured it out!
I feel like what came first was the song, the twist, then the movie.
Okay.
Yes, I agree.
I think that's the order of events here.
And nobody taps them on the shoulders and they're like, guys, that's fucking stupid. That's super fucking stupid. But
no one tells them
they
that.
Went with that. This is,
and I'll agree, it was stupid.
It's weird. Like I thought Us was the dumbest twist I'd seen this year.
Relax.
I mean, I like this one more, if I'm being honest.
Come off your high horse.
No, Us ain't high on my list. Don't worry about it. Yeah, that's a shit twist. And this is pretty bad too, but you know, like,
it just works though. That's the thing about it. Like, none of this movie is particularly good, but it works.
Yes, none of this movie's good. Don't kid yourself, Nick. This movie sucks. This is a bullshit movie, and that's okay.
But it works.
Oh my god. Okay, I
was enjoying every moment.
I was sitting in the theater with Abby, but I have like the
great date movie, by the way.
No, actually,
oh, no!
It's not. She fucking hated the movie.
Oh, no.
Absolutely yeah. Hated it. We come out, she's like, why did you bring me to that?
Does she have a soft spot for Hallmark movies or no?
No. She hates the Christmas Prince movies. She can't stand any of that.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It really brings her down a couple pegs, I know.
You
right?
may not have to marry her after that.
So I need to hear from you guys. Did you guys like the movie?
Well, I think we liked it ironically, and you liked it literally, but I don't think there's much of a difference.
Yes.
I think that's what I'm coming to. Yes,
I liked it quite ironically.
I think those are the same thing in my universe. I'm not a big fan of ironic love of things. I just love them, and the irony is separate and apart from that.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I had a blast. Here's what I'll say, right? Paul Feig makes good comedies.
No, he doesn't, but okay.
No, he does. And everyone that's so hard on him has a stick up there.
If I've laughed at any single... I mean, it's going to be a cold day in hell when I've laughed at a
movie. Did you not laugh at this movie at all?
Nope.
What?
Oh, I had some great laughs at this.
There were some great laughs.
Okay.
Okay, Bridesmaids is good.
All right.
Wow.
Tell yourself that over and over again.
Bridesmaids is good. It's objectively good.
Spy is totally fine. Spy is a totally passable
comedy. I think
what
it comes down to is Paul Feig doesn't make movies for Adam.
Yeah.
No, that's true.
And by the way, and that Ghostbusters movie, not particularly good, but man, did it not deserve the hatred most people heaped upon it. It's really not that bad.
Was that the new remake?
Yeah, the all-female remake.
The only good thing that Paul Feig's ever done, as far as I'm concerned, is Freaks and Geeks. And that's
well, he did a lot of TV direction before that.
Yeah, that's essentially where the conversation like starts and ends for me, though.
I think Bridesmaids is really good. Bridesmaids is one of the best comedies of the decade.
Yeah, whatever.
It's awesome.
I don't think Adam, I don't think you're the target audience for any of these movies by any means. I mean, fair. I don't think we're the target audience. I think we're already on the outlines, but you're further out than us.
Sure.
Yes.
So
Bridesmaids fundamentally does not work for me. I'm just like,
that is so weird. Why?
I was just like, this movie is the most unfunny thing. I just don't find it funny.
Oh, Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig are great in that.
Yeesh. No. Oh, I disagree. Man. No.
Didn't one of them get an Oscar nomination?
I think Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy's nominated for an Oscar for that movie.
Yeah.
She's awesome in that movie.
She's pretty funny in most stuff that she's in. I mean,
can we move on?
You don't like Melissa McCarthy?
No, I want to bore down on this.
I just don't find her funny at all. I was like, yeah, that was a bad joke. That was a bad joke. That was what you just said or did was not funny. Move on, please.
What do you like better, The Hangover or Bridesmaids?
The first Hangover, I prefer.
Okay.
Which I don't.
The Hangover was like funny, like the first time. Like it had like that month where it was like really like everybody cared about it. But like watching it again, I don't know if you've ever watched it again recently, it loses all that charm.
Yeah, it doesn't work as well. But see, I don't like Step Brothers. That's another thing. Yeah, I have to understand. Like my comedy is very, very specific. That's why I prefer like English humor. Like, I don't know, spoken jokes in movies don't do absolutely nothing for me. So I need something a little more visually interesting. And yeah, like something like Step Brothers is just boring to me.
And you find Bridesmaids not visually interesting?
We gotta get out. I'm not talking. What are you talking about? No.
All right. Okay.
God. No. Oh God. I'm gonna be sick. Get out of here.
Paul Feig makes good comedies. That's my take. He's not changing the world. He's not fucking Stanley Kubrick doing Doctor Strangelove. But he makes solid comedies.
I will.
And by the way, in an era where comedies are not flourishing on the big screen, there are like two good comedies a year at most. Mm-hmm. Paul Feig is one of the better comedy directors in Hollywood.
And I'll be generous. I'll be as generous as I possibly can and say he makes mediocre comedies. So there you go.
So that's element number one. I thought it was slightly elevated from a directorial point of view. And it's not terrible.
From a Hallmark movie, yes.
Yes. I was expecting just a pure Hallmark movie, and it wasn't that. Point number two. Emilia Clarke is delightful in this movie, and this is when I'm calling out by name all the Emilia Clarke haters, including Adam Hall, by the way, who on this podcast several times, the Emilia Clarke skepticism will not stand on this podcast anymore. I will not have it. I will have no talk because y'all got off the train after season six of Game of Thrones and you never got back on. I never sold my Emilia Clarke stock and now it's paying dividends, motherfucker. The day of reckoning is here on Emilia.
Emilia Clarke was delightful in this movie.
Yes, she was. Hell yeah.
She was terrible in Solo. Can we agree?
Solo was not her fault.
I don't disagree.
Not her fault.
Bad casting. It's also the same problem with season six and beyond of Game of Thrones. Emilia Clarke is best in the role of a charming girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she was not that beyond season six of Game of Thrones, and she was not that in Solo.
Man, the shot of her, though, when she's about to burn down the Red Keep. And
yeah, sure, but I mean that's just lighting and angling and shit. It has nothing to do with her. No, are you fucking kidding?
It's everything on her face. She's on top of that dragon. She goes through 10 emotions in that one shot. Oh,
but that's not why we love her. That's not why we love
her. That's why I love her. She's a terrific actress. She's a terrific actress.
She's so bad in Game of Thrones, guys. She sucks.
Man,
I can't.
I liked her early on in Game of Thrones.
I will die on this hill.
She's not good. She has zero charisma in Game of Thrones. I can't.
You watched the early seasons, right?
Yeah, I can't. No, not good. And Solo, Solo.
Terrible in Solo.
She's just boring in Solo.
Right. She's just.
And if I'm being honest, this is the best way.
The movie's boring, y'all.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it sucks.
But I will say this. I like.
You like Terminator Genesis? Is that where this is going?
We got to get on Emilia Clarke. Like, we have a conversation about.
Have you seen Terminator Genesis?
I've seen parts, and it's horrendous.
Okay,
I can't watch the whole thing.
All right.
But
wow.
I think Emilia. Yeah, it's really bad. But I think Emilia Clarke's character in this is awful. I think her performance is very good, though. I actually like Emilia Clarke's performance in this quite a bit. She's quite charming, even though I think she's a fucking idiot the entire way through.
Now, I agree with you here with the character of...
It's hard to like her character, in my opinion.
Maybe this is just us, maybe because we're guys even. I don't know. But the character of, like, a female who is, like, an alcoholic kind of thing, it's just... it's the same thing when I watch, like, Jessica Jones.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's just not as, I don't know, for some reason, it doesn't, I don't even really want to watch like a guy who's like an alcoholic mess. It's just like, get your shit together, you know? I don't know.
No, but guys with an alcoholic problem or alcoholism and a troubled romantic life are just complicated, right? And women that are alcoholics and have complicated lives are like sluts and shit. I think that's
right.
The problem.
And I think there's also, there's like a stigma.
There's definitely a double standard. There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
But, you know, it is sort of just kind of unappealing to watch at the beginning, to be honest. And it's probably a bias somewhere.
I found her so lovable.
Once she started, again, for me, something I always love is just like the personal responsibility aspect of anything. Like people just like growing.
Yes.
I like that. That's why some of my favorite stories are like coming of age stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
I love that sort of personal growth thing, and that's sort of what she experiences here. And as soon as she starts going through that, the movie just builds for me.
Maybe it takes a long time for her to grow, though. In my opinion.
Not that long, no. Like 10-20 minutes before she starts moving.
I'm going about a good hour before any real growth actually starts happening. I don't know, man. I thought the character.
The movie was barely an hour long. What are you talking about?
Wasn't it like 2 hours? Was it like.
No, it was like 90 minutes.
It did not overstay its welcome. It was like an hour 40.
I thought it had like 15 endings, by the way. But that's neither here nor there.
What's wrong with that?
You
just keep them coming.
It's the Peter Jackson problem.
I was just about to say, are we going to.
40 more.
Go back on Peter Jackson now?
Make the sequel. I want make the sequel. Last Christmas, the next last Christmas, the ending part two.
Yeah.
No. I'm here's what I've realized about Emilia Clarke is that she's a comedy actress.
She's better. Yeah.
That's what I've realized.
She's much better at this.
She should have a sitcom, mm-hmm. and she'd be great if she had if she had like a CBS sitcom.
It was weird seeing her like be charming. I was like, oh my god, Emilia Clarke has charisma. I've never seen this before. Right, it was actually kind of cool.
Right.
And I was like, all right, I'll welcome this. I just wish the character was a little easier to love because I pretty much the entire
but by the end she is
a little better
for the most part.
Yeah, for the for the most part. But it just took so long to get there. I think by that point I was a little burnt out. But I don't know. I don't know, man.
I did not experience even a single shred of burnout. This movie could have been 6 hours long, and I would have watched it twice.
He loved this movie, Adam.
I know he did.
Adam, he loved it. I mean, I'm still kind of being facetious when I say I loved it, but he legitimately
loved it.
There is no wink whatsoever in what he's saying. There is none of that.
It was great.
Not a shred of irony.
You ever just shake like a Christmas globe and it just like a snow globe and it just gives you like joy, you know?
You're like a cat.
This movie is just like it's my little snow globe.
He's like a cat with this movie. I want Emilia Clarke to be in like a great film and she just hasn't done that yet, you know?
Yeah,
I don't think it's her place.
It's really
there's only like one person on Game of Thrones who should be in a great film, and that's Peter Dinklage.
Yes.
Yes.
The rest of them are just they're just action figures, you know? I mean, Game of Thrones is a good show, but it's bigger than the actors.
I understand that. I'm just saying like especially after this movie, I was like, okay, like she has some chops, but like put her in the right role. She just keeps making the worst decisions. She's like picking her movies with a fucking dartboard.
She's not making bad decisions.
She's
starring in $200 million blockbusters.
That bomb.
I think that's not good.
That's a greater conversation on the movies that are coming out nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's her choice specifically. I mean, like if anybody was told, do you want to be in a Terminator movie? They'd
be
like, sure.
Do you
want to
be Sarah Connor? I mean, yes, of course I want to be Sarah Connor.
And you know, was she the worst part of that movie?
Did she?
Probably
if she read the script, I would have hoped she was like, yeah, no, this is a bad idea.
Man, you're putting a lot of fucking
this movie especially
artistic responsibility on Emilia fucking Clarke.
This movie was not a good
decision.
You're
allowed to do that with George Clooney, but I mean, like, she was in one television show and they offered her two major franchises and she took them. Of course,
one thing that's really important for everybody to remember is that nobody expected Game of Thrones to be a hit.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
like these people were chosen. These were young people with not a lot of experience, frankly. I mean, to a degree, I'm going to go back to Peter Dinklage or even Lena Headey. Those two probably were on the fence about Game of Thrones.
Probably, yeah.
Compared to all the other people who are begging to be in anything.
Yeah, I mean, like, she's very young.
she's been boosted to this mega stardom, but I don't think it's really a fair way to judge her.
Do you want her to do indies for the next 20 years?
Yeah. She could do that too.
Yeah,
okay, but then if that's the case, then you want everyone to do indies for the next 20 years.
I want you to just make good movies. I'm just saying, read your scripts.
But I don't think that falls on the actor. I think the actor can only do so much. You know?
Brad Pitt can do that because Brad Pitt already made his 10 blockbusters. Well,
yeah, and there are certain actors also who can really completely like take command and like make a movie that sucks good.
Yes,
like
that's what
Sam
I mean.
Sam Elliott with the man who killed Hitler in the Bigfoot, for example.
Fair, yeah.
Right?
Great example. Yep.
You can't meet me halfway where it's like they give her the script and they present her with the opportunity and she's like yes or no because that's how it works.
But okay, how many
agent, for example, who does that stuff for her?
How many of these phone calls is she getting is my point?
Probably a lot.
You think
she's probably, you have to think about all the things
has
she's
Marvel
probably
called her
away.
Yet?
Has what? What?
There's probably a bunch of things that she's turning away that we don't know about.
Yeah, who knows?
You know, that could be way worse. And Marvel's probably called her.
I would think that Marvel's called her.
They've called Sansa and Tyrion.
I actually find it hard to believe that Marvel probably hasn't called her, but I'm just saying, like, okay, you have all these options. I'm almost positive this actor has all those options.
I don't think you can say that for sure.
I also just feel like it's easy to say, you know, in hindsight.
Yeah, I think it's a safe bet to assume that she's been offered a lot of shit.
Okay, I'm not sure that's true, but I mean, how do we know? We're not in the room. Anyway, this is what she should be doing. I'm all in favor of her in this. Okay. Nick, plot. Let's do this. Go.
The plot. Yeah, so we follow Emilia Clarke, who had her basically her life is in shambles. She moved out from her parents' house because they are which country are they from? It's been a week since I watched the movie now.
Yugoslavia.
Yugoslavia, okay. Yeah, so they're from...
Thank God you pulled that out of your ass.
Is that right?
That's what it is.
I sure as shit didn't remember.
Oh, yeah. Come on, guys. Okay, so they're from a war-torn Slavic country. Yes. That I'm pretty confident in saying. Hmm. And they moved to America for a better life. And that move has taken a lot of toll on their family. Mm-hmm. Needless to say, it's you know, her father was a prestigious lawyer back home, and now he's forced to be an Uber driver. And there's problems with her parents' marriage. There's problems with her relationship with her sister. And they're always trying to one-up each other and all these different things. So her life is sort of in shambles. She's, you know, trying to stay with all of her friends. But every time she stays with a friend, she ruins something and they kick her out. She has a hard time holding down her job. And we know that she had some sort of illness, which they only vaguely talk about. And she resents her mother because her mother was happiest when she was ill. And so she thinks that her mother sort of wants her to be sick again, so she feels important. And so there's family problems is really long story short.
That's a strange thing to assume. Like you want me to be dying or something, you know?
Well, but actually, I mean, it sort of makes sense in the way like her mother doesn't feel important. And
I get that.
Makes her feel important. I get that.
That is the plot of the HBO miniseries Sharp Objects starring Amy Adams.
I've not seen Sharp Objects.
Which is a terrible miniseries with like one good episode, but that's the premise. Okay, go ahead. Continue.
So, and she has like, you know, a bunch of one night stands and stuff. And, you know, this is just sort of her life now. She works at a Christmas shop.
I do love the scene, by the way, at the beginning where she gets caught in the shower and she goes, who are you? And she goes, the plumber.
Yeah. Yeah. So she was sleeping with a married man and his wife came home early, opens the shower to find Emilia Clarke in there.
Yeah.
And who are you? I'm the plumber. What? Wife took it surprisingly well.
I thought so too.
That's not
no
her
murder.
Fault.
Yeah.
It's not Emilia's fault.
I love that guy. That guy's commitment. He was going to go down the street and get some stuff to make her like some tea or whatever the hell it was. Or was he? My question was he actually going down to get some tea, or was he just making a break for it?
That's his apartment.
Okay.
No, his wife specifically said she came home like 3 days early from the conference or something.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
So he was not expecting her home.
All right. So. He was like a nice guy, though. I was surprised. I was like, "Aw, you dick. You piece of shit."
Yeah.
Like he was treating her so well. I kind of saw it.
So she works at this Christmas shop for a Asian woman named Santa.
I love this actress. By the way.
Love her.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
In this movie.
Yeah. I've loved that. I don't know what her name is, but she's great in pretty much everything she's been in.
Michelle Yu. Mm. Oh yeah, Crouching Tiger, Crazy Rich Asians. She's listed on IMDb as starring in all 5 of the Avatar sequels.
Oh my god!
Oh my god! I can't believe they have pages already.
They have 5 now, or
they're going up to Avatar 5.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She's fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah, and so basically, you know, she owns a Christmas shop in are they New York City? Right?
No, they're in London.
London. Oh, right. Yeah. Not America. They all British accents.
She's my favorite part of the movie, by the way.
But yeah,
I loved her.
I loved when we learned later about her that she used to work at different places and she takes on a different name every place she worked.
Right. When she was at a pet shop, she was named Kitty.
A bakery. She was Cookie, I think, right?
Muffin.
Muffin. Right.
They called me Muff for short.
Right. Humorous little things like that.
I found it strange, though, when Emilia Clarke comes up to her and asks her about that, and she's like, your name's not Santa, but she's completely serious about it. Like, did she actually assume that her name was Santa?
I know a woman.
It just kind of shows. It just kind of shows how little thought she put into everything that she does, though. You know,
I think it's the thought that Emma Thompson put into the screenplay.
I know a woman named Santa.
That's fucking weird.
I know a woman named Santa.
That's bizarre.
I know a woman named Jolly.
Ugh.
I don't know if that helps.
These names suck. I'm calling out Jolly on the podcast. You have a terrible name.
No, it's a nice name. It's a nice name. Sweet.
Santa.
I do, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no, it's not, you know. I mean, somebody had to be named Santa first.
Well, it's actually, I believe it's a Hispanic name.
Oh, okay.
Not an Asian name.
All right, that's okay. I give him credit then.
Yeah. Santa Domingo or something.
Okay, that's different.
Santa Clara.
All right.
So she ends up seeing a strange man of... So I've talked about this with a few people. What was his race?
I think he was German.
Not that it really matters, but I think it does matter a little bit. I think they picked a very ambiguous looking guy.
They mention sauerkraut on multiple occasions, so I'm going
no,
with
no,
German.
No, not him. I'm talking about Emilia Clarke's sort of love interest.
Oh.
I don't care. I don't care about the Santa love plotline. I don't give a shit. I'm not going to mention it.
We're not going to mention him?
That was so freaking weird.
We're going
over
the plot now. I'm not going to mention that. It's not relevant.
His ethnicity, I'm going to say he's Indonesian.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, some people said Asian. Some had said Hispanic to me.
No, he's
No.
He's Asian.
Some said they picked the most white-looking minority dude possible.
That is correct.
That
is accurate.
But sort of ambiguous, and I kind of think that was on purpose. I don't know.
I don't know. Do you think so?
Well, I'll tell you the actor's ethnicity right now.
Did I get it?
Father is English, mother is Malaysian.
Ooh.
Okay.
So there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I only bring it up because I think it was done for a reason, because they could have gotten any dude in the whole world. Because clearly they didn't care enough.
People, an indigenous group in Sarawak.
Because this guy's role was not, in a weird kind of way, not that important.
To the overall plot, yeah, not really.
You know, so
not
they really could have picked anyone, I think, and it would have been fine.
Yes.
Yeah. But he's sort of a strange dude that she meets, and we find out he rides his bicycle everywhere to drop off parcels, and he does not have a cell phone, which is a strange thing.
Well, he has
thing.
A cell phone, but it's locked in his cabinet.
Right. Yeah. So as she begins to, he takes her for a walk around town, and he keeps telling her, look up, and she sees things that she's never seen, basically, you know, showing her the world in a way that she hasn't seen it before, I guess. And so as she starts to fall for him, she finds that it's difficult to keep track of him and find him because he doesn't have a phone and he just rides his bike all over the city.
Volunteering at homeless shelters and whatnot.
Right. And yeah, she learns he volunteers at a homeless shelter. But so the next, 20, 30 minutes of the movie is sort of her just trying to track him down while trying to, he sort of shows her that her life is a little bit in shambles.
Yes.
And so she sort of tries to make amends. And that's what the next middle half is. And this part's kind of just
a lot of nothing.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Were you guys sitting there thinking to yourselves, where's the twist? Or did you have the thought? I didn't because I saw it coming. But I imagine if you were watching this movie and you're thinking, oh, this is just a run of the mill Hallmark movie. Why is this in theaters starring Emilia Clarke, directed by Paul Feig? Did you anticipate that the shoe was going to drop at some point?
I mean, I probably would not have if I was just a regular person in the audience, but I was aware of the fact that there was a twist coming.
Okay.
So, I was kind of wondering what it was going to be. I kept thinking, oh, he's gay. That'd be a great little bit of social commentary to deconstruct these romance films a little bit.
Right.
And nope. Well, that's not at all what it is.
Yep.
In fact, she actually asks him.
You had no clue.
And I will be honest, actually, about this, okay? You know I love this film.
Yes.
I only liked it up until the twist.
Okay.
That's fair. Okay.
I only liked it up until the twist. And then in retrospect, I was like, wow, that was really fun all the way through.
Because I will say the twist, I can't believe I'm talking about this in the realm of good twists in quotes, but I mean
it's not really, but
it's not, but
it's the execution, it's not the twist itself.
Yes.
It is the execution.
I love how much Nick loves this.
I don't know.
What do you mean? It is absolutely the execution.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, not because it's like it's necessarily like, wow, that was crazy or anything, because like I said, the twist isn't that crazy. It's the fact that
why do you mean the twist is not that crazy? The twist is pretty fucking crazy.
But I mean, it's if you had the information, it would have been predictable.
Really?
I'm saying, yeah, because of the song.
It's all in the song, Adam. It's all right there.
Because it's right there in the song.
It's right
there.
Had
the information,
I don't
want to
hear you over here, okay?
You know, if you had the information about the heart surgery that she had a year before, if we knew that, it would have been obvious. The fact that they didn't, they kept that from you a little bit, made it work.
Are you saying that if you were given the information on the heart surgery and then you heard the song Last Christmas I Gave You My Heart, but the very next day you gave it away, you'd be able to parse out the plot of this movie?
Yeah.
No. No, yeah. Come on. I don't believe
you. Well, here's the thing. If she said that she had open heart surgery a year before and I heard Last Christmas I Gave You My Heart,
like immediate-
I would have said, okay.
Okay, so the twist of this movie, obviously, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to beat around the bush here.
I don't know what's so difficult about that.
Is that the dream man Tom is, in fact, not real.
He's literally a dream man.
Yes, he is literally a dream man, a figment of Amelia Clark's imagination.
Or is he a ghost? Or is he...
Whatever he is.
Yeah.
He was the guy who donated his heart to Amelia Clark, who needed the surgery. Gave her a second shot at life. He not only saved her metaphorically by showing her the errors of her ways, but he literally saved her by giving his heart to let her live on.
A la Jesse Plemons and Dick Cheney.
And that's exactly like the exactly right. The Jesse Plemons character in
I truly
in Vice,
think that if right at the beginning of the film they were just like, "Yeah, I had open heart surgery last year," like so you would have put it together by the time they got there.
No, okay, I'm just gonna say no.
How could you not have?
Like, I just wouldn't imagine
because it's completely ridiculous.
Of course, it's ridiculous. Just last week, hold on. No, I'm taking offense to this because just last week, Nico said, every one of these movies has magic in them. Like, you literally, those words came out of your mouth. So don't even try and tell me right now. Don't even try to stand on your little fucking high horse and say, I never would have thought of that. Like, of course you
would
have.
First of all, I love this movie. Don't get me wrong. I love it. I just am shocked by the fact that this movie was ever greenlit. That someone said, we're going to take George Michael's Last Christmas and adapt it literally. Yeah, where the guy literally gives her her heart as if George Michael and Wham thought that was the meaning of the song.
Oh, sure, sure.
As if that was the intent. Are you serious? It's a metaphor. It's a metaphor. It's a love song. And Emma Thompson took it literally. How absurd is that?
But that's the thing. That's the yes, it is very absurd. But that's the thing.
Nick,
they know
it's
that you're. Hold on. It's just, they know you're not going to take it literally, which is why the twist works. You see my point? They know it's absurd. Of course it's absurd. That's why it works.
Okay. Oh, they knew Maggie wasn't going to shoot Mr. Burns, so that's why the twist works so well.
This entire podcast is just a best of Nick Evangelista. Jesus Christ.
No, this is one of your finest moments. This is your finest hour right here. That is unbelievable.
Wow. Okay. The first thing I said, like, okay, so we came out of the theater and there were people legitimately discussing the movie,
right,
talking about how much they loved it more than The Irishman.
Right.
Oh, my God. And
well,
then,
because this movie didn't overstay its welcome.
Well, fair point. Anyway, but I just turned to Abby, like, with my floor on the ground, and she's like, she's like wide eyed. She's like, did they really just do that? And I'm just like,
dude, yeah, that was my experience. I'm like, holy shit.
I'm just like,
why would they do that?
Did they just make a movie based around a lyric, not even the whole song, a lyric? That's
really
the movie.
Half a lyric. Because the other half is kind of important context. That,
whatever. That's
really
not what they were doing. Someone sang Last Christmas I Gave You My Heart.
Yep,
movie.
Stop it there. Perfect.
I have it.
Got an idea. It's like, well, no, but if you keep listening, shh. Writing time.
This... Nico, you're 100% right. The fact that anyone greenlit this is incredible.
It's absurd.
Amazing.
Happy it was. I'm very happy it was.
Me
but
too.
It's preposterous.
Yes.
But it's like, if I, I'm going to sue
it. If they
I'm gonna,
didn't do that, hold on. If they didn't do that, this would have been just another fucking dumb Christmas movie.
I can't wait to adapt Bon Jovi's You Give Love a Bad Name, shot through the heart and You're to Blame. I can't wait for that. Oh my! And make that a dark, gritty noir story.
That would be pretty good. I'd like that.
No, but it's not lit. It's a metaphor. That's why it's a song.
Yeah. Can you imagine how boring Stairway to Heaven would be? It's just a woman with blonde hair climbing up for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, but if but that's if David really Lynch long directed story. It, it'd be fucking incredible. Hold on. If that was a David Lynch movie, you know it'd be fucking incredible. Am I right?
There's a lady who's sure all that glitters is gold. And she's buying a Stairway to Heaven.
It starts with her purchasing.
Yeah, she's there with a salesman then negotiating costs on the stairway.
Before, right? You've done
yeah,
your
math. You can get that gold, but that's because that's the only thing that glitters. That's what it is for 2 hours. No, this is just rife with great material. Pick a song and we'll literally adapt it.
Listen, you don't want to do any maths, right?
Name any song, math? Adam. Go ahead. Name a song.
I don't want to know what the song Beat It would be like. But, yeah.
I got one. How about the Ghostbusters?
Well, that is literal. That's already literal.
Oh, boy. Unbelievable, man.
Oh, boy.
I just love how much he defends this movie.
You guys have done math before, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you know when there's a negative times a negative, it makes a positive.
Sure.
That's this movie. That it would have been stupid without the absurdity. So you add it in, and it cancels out and makes it good.
It fundamentally changes the film for me.
Like right, in a way that's positive.
sort of.
Yes, admit it. Just admit it. It's okay to admit that this stupid fucking idea works. It's okay.
But not for I don't think it's for the... It doesn't work for the reasons that I think you're referring to, Nick.
What do you mean?
The reasons are very separate from the cinematic experience.
No, you thought it was legitimately clever. You sat there and you scratched your chin and you said, huh, they may be onto something.
No, there's a one sole reason why I liked it. There's one sole reason. I said this before, but I'm going to reiterate it. The reason I liked it is because at that point, the movie stops being a love story.
Right.
And it starts being about her personal growth.
I like that idea.
And that's what I liked about it. It led me to believe that it was going to be a love story, and then it wasn't. That's what I liked.
Yes, that's a great idea. It's a great idea. I'm not disagreeing with you there, but I'm just saying, we're talking about execution now. just because you have the ideas
the
there.
Yeah, execution.
Does not...
It led me to believe it was a love story, and then it wasn't.
I didn't even care about that afterwards is the problem. Like I said, I don't care about what the theme of the movie is.
You were just so far away at that point.
I'm so stuck on the absurdity of this
Yes.
twist. Because it truly is. You just can't help but think about the boardroom meetings where they're brainstorming this shit.
I think you're overestimating how many people were involved in this. I don't think there were boardroom meetings.
However many people were in that room, think, let's say they were five.
Name? What's the writer's name?
Emma
what's the
Thompson.
Writer's name?
There were five
she was
Nick
sitting
Evangelistas
at home and
in
she
that
wrote
room.
The script. No, she was sitting at home and she wrote the script and she called Paul Feig and he said, let's do it. That's the end of the conversation. Who's going to say no to that between those two? Right? Why wouldn't Paul Feig say yes to this?
You know, the problem with Nick is that he's never wrong.
I actually think he's more right than we are on this one. I will take the L on this one. Just no, because here's the thing. I always give the edge to sincerity, and he's very sincere in his opinion.
We'll let him have this one.
And I will always give the edge to the person that actually believes what they're saying, as opposed to us who are cackling away. But...
You guys are just trying to, like, piss me off. That's what it is. You're just trying to fight me.
No, I just can't get over just the gall and the just, like, the self-righteousness of Emma Thompson in a room thinking this was a good idea.
Yes.
That's all. I just can't get over that. And thank God that ego did exist because enough people had enough ego for this thing to get shoehorned into Hollywood, but...
I've never heard Abby say that that wasn't a movie. We walked out. She's like, that was not a movie. I'm like, whoa.
You know, though, it's so easy to be a critic, okay?
Yes.
And it's also so easy to be critical of yourself. Mm. And when you're writing a script, you can take something that could be brilliant and make it shitty because you're being self-critical of yourself. If I had the ability to write with reckless abandon, I would be a millionaire because that's what works.
You're not wrong.
You're not wrong. Think about, like, Kanye West is another great example.
You're
it's
not
either,
wrong.
Either you have no shame or you
nothing.
Suck.
No, it's like no shame or nothing.
100% right.
Right.
You're entirely right.
Yep.
You just got to let the ideas flow.
Mm-hmm.
And that is definitely what happened here. No doubt about that. So, yeah, the whole theme of the movie essentially is you know, how does Emilia Clarke make the most of her second chance? Mm-hmm. You know, you have my heart in me. And they fall in love, and she's very horny throughout the entire thing. Yeah. She wants to sleep with him so bad. And
I think that's why Nico liked the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked imagining that very much. But it was kind of like the role reversal, because in this case, the guy did not want to have sex with the girl. He said, let's wait. We barely know each other. Yep. So a little role reversal there.
That was nice.
Actually, that might be the biggest fantastical element of the movie, though.
the guy
that might be the most unrealistic
part.
That,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is it was kind of nice seeing her go back and, like, all of the friends that she, like, you know, made a mistake and fucked over. She, like, broke their aquarium and killed their fish or whatever when she was staying with them. She goes back and she repays all these people. She, you know, repays her sister. She repays at the homeless shelter by giving back and stuff. I just liked it all. It was just it was nice, feel good, charming. It was more excuse for her to be charming, which is what I want to see on screen.
Absolutely,
just Emilia Clarke and charm.
Here, here.
It just works.
Can I say the strangest thing about this movie for me personally, aside from the obvious? the very end, there's a kind of a musical number where
that was weird.
Yeah, well, it's weird, but you gotta pay attention to the people in the audience. Because sitting directly behind Emilia Clarke's parents, for some godforsaken reason, is the realtor that informed her that Tom was dead. Why?
Yeah, so this is one of those things where at the end of a movie, they just take everybody. And they just put them in there.
I understand that, but like just seeing it just confused the hell out of me.
Well, they also do it with the two lady cops who are the only ones patrolling the streets of London, apparently. Mm-hmm. There are no other police officers except for those two.
Yep.
You know what it comes... I think it sort of comes from... Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it sort of comes from theater, where at the end of a play, they always get the whole cast together for like the last scene.
Yes.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I just saw a play last week, which is sort of why this is on my mind. Mm-hmm. I saw Hello, Dolly.
How was Hello, Dolly, by the way?
Have you ever watched it?
No.
I mean, it was legitimately fucking hilarious, like all the way through.
All right.
Okay.
I had a really good time.
Cool.
But yeah, it ends with like a wedding, and everybody from the play was there at the end of the wedding. And you know, when they all do their bowing at the end, that was actually incorporated into like the wedding scene. So sort of ended the show. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I feel like that must be just where it comes from, is just from like musical theater background.
Could be.
Yeah.
I don't know if the writer here did musical theater before. I mean, I would imagine most actors have, but
there were two other people credited on the screenplay, Greg Wise and Bryony Kimmings. Perhaps they have some experience. I don't know. Oh, actually, Greg Wise co-wrote Sense and Sensibility with Emma Thompson, and she actually won an Oscar for that.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, she won Best Screenplay.
Oh, okay.
Best Adapted Screenplay.
I would love it, by the way, if it comes out like by the end of the or partway through next year, where Emma Thompson's like, they just butchered my screenplay for Last Christmas. It was my baby, and they completely destroyed it.
They really didn't understand the subtext of the movie.
You killed my boy.
They didn't understand I wanted it to be even more literal.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I wanted Emilia Clarke to give away the heart at the end of the movie.
No, I wanted him to physically hand his beating heart into her open chest.
The only way it works is if you merge this movie with Mother.
Last Christmas, I gave you my heart, and the very next day, I did an Indiana Jones effect. Where the guy reaches in and tears the heart out. Circle of life, motherfuckers.
I see where you're going with that.
Yeah, that end scene, I feel like I see that a lot, where a character puts on a production and everyone in that person's life attends the production.
Yeah.
Where that never happens. You know what I mean? Like, most one-person shows are like the scene in Big Lebowski with the interpretive dancer, the landlord interpretive dancer. There's like four guys in the audience.
Yeah.
But in Christmas movies, everyone's there.
Imagine if you were doing a stand-up comedy show or something like downtown or whatever, and you texted all your friends and said, hey, come out and support me. Like, maybe two would come.
Four tops.
Because friends suck.
Four tops.
Oh, yeah. Now, I always think of the scene in La La Land now where Emma Stone puts on her show and there's like 10 people in the audience maybe.
That's exactly
now,
what it is.
Now let's up the ante a little bit, okay? You have pretty much ruined everybody you know's lives, and you ask them to come to your Christmas charity concert at the homeless shelter.
Right, and it stinks in there.
And they're also not even your friends. They're just people you've met in the past 30 days.
Yes.
And they all show up. Wow.
That realtor doesn't know fucking anybody in there, by the way.
There's no way he's going stag. Exactly. Maybe he brings a date. Maybe.
I don't think he was with a date because I think he was with another character that was completely separate.
Right. Yeah. So, of course not. So, could you imagine getting an invite cold and you're just walking into a room of 50 strangers and homeless men?
Thank you for telling me that my friend was dead the whole time. Will you come to my show?
Jesus.
Oh man, that's good stuff. Anyway,
and also, how is that apartment not sold for a year? I know they tried writing that in and being like, "Oh, it makes sense." No, it doesn't. No, I'm sorry, doesn't. It's London.
No, it doesn't.
And that was a perfectly fine apartment.
Yes, it was.
A little tiny.
It is small, but
I mean, it's a studio,
mm-hmm. Right? But
no, those usually gobble up pretty fast, right?
Yeah, well, especially ones that studio apartments aren't that nice usually.
I'm just assuming London real estate is like Manhattan real estate, but maybe it's not. I don't know.
Yeah, who the hell knows?
Yeah. I do want to shout out some of my funny moments from the movie. By the way, I was in the theater Thursday afternoon. Maybe 1 o'clock. Four single guys, a group of three,
yeah,
and me. That was the room.
That's all that was in there?
That was it.
Well, and
Thursday afternoon.
I feel like this movie is, I know we've talked about movies like this before, but I can't think of a good example. This is a prime example of a movie that I think was aimed at the wrong audience. You know what I mean? Like the audience they marketed it to, I don't think are the people who actually are going to like it.
They should have been
marketing to people like me.
So hold on.
They should have been playing trailers for this NFL Sunday.
Yeah.
So hold on. It was four guys, a group of three, and then just you?
Yes.
You should have turned to them and just been like, podcasting. Yeah. Podcasting.
Oh, what a guest spot on my podcast.
Mine's actually, I actually do a YouTube movie review series.
Yeah, that's good shit. Yeah, no, but it was four guys too, that it's 2 in the afternoon, so they assumed no one would be in the theater, so they went so no one would spot them. You know, they didn't want to admit that they had just bought a ticket to Last Christmas, like me. But I'm there, and so there's like this Brexit subplot, kind of. I can't even call it a subplot, like a thematic element. There's this Brexit thing running over it. It's basically a movie about treating people kindly, and I guess Brexit is a big thing in London now, so of course, and the parents are immigrants, so there are times where people from Yugoslavia are harassed, mm-hmm, for coming from another country, and Emilia Clarke stands up to these guys, whatever. There's this moment where she comes home to her Yugoslavian mother, played by Emma Thompson, who I believe has the performance of the movie. And she goes up to Emma Thompson and goes, "Listen, they're not going to throw you out. You're a citizen. This is your country. You come from here." And Emma Thompson says to Emilia Clarke, "I blame the Poles."
That's right.
I was the only one that laughed in the theater, and I had a belly laugh. I went,
"That's fucking hilarious." Yeah.
I did a ha in the theater by myself.
Abby and I both did the exact same thing.
And you know why I laughed? Because my grandmother would say the exact same thing.
I blame the Poles.
I blame the Poles was my favorite moment of the movie.
Yeah, that's an important thing to mention, though, is that the movie does touch upon some of these important social issues that, you know, I think it's good that it did. I mean, it doesn't hurt the movie.
I blame the Poles was great. You know what else was great? Well, the sister,
I was
going to
say also
lesbian,
the LG,
right?
Yeah, the LGBT issue there.
That was interesting.
With especially also having like a foreign family who's not as accepting of that. Mm-hmm. So that was a fun way to sort of integrate that into the plot and
sit down as we enjoy this lesbian pudding.
That was a great line.
That was so funny.
I have to admit that was a great line.
No, like, there's some solid comedy in here. I had a couple laughs.
Most of the
comedy
was from the mother, let's be honest here. Like, I also just love the scene where Emilia Clarke goes out into the city with her mother, and if there's no dialogue, it's just them, like, walking around.
Yeah.
I liked that. Mm. I don't know. I liked that sequence. I don't know about you guys, but...
Yeah. It's all right.
Yeah, I thought the movie was totally charming and entertaining. That's my thought.
Charming and entertaining.
I think it's incredibly stupid.
yes, it is. It
preposterously stupid. The twist is ridiculous. and it's a cornball Hallmark movie on steroids. That's what it is.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, there are worse ways to spend an afternoon.
Oh, it's not the worst movie I've seen this year.
No.
Certainly
you're
not.
You're making me realize, though, I think all a movie needs to do is charm me. I don't care about anything else. It doesn't need to be good. It doesn't need to be smart.
You know, I actually agree with that, because even like some of those shitty monster movies that I love so much, even if they can charm me just a little bit, I'm like, you know what? I kind of like it.
Yeah, just...
I agree.
I also want to point out...
That's an excellent point.
As preposterous as the twist is, what might be even more preposterous is that Emma Thompson thought George Michael could score an entire movie. Because that's...
I didn't believe you, by the way. I was like, because you messaged both of us, and you're like, do they have to play only fucking George Michael music? And I'm just like, they didn't only play George Michael music.
Of course they did.
What are you talking about? Oh, God. They're only playing George Michael music. Holy God.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
I got to tell you what, though. I got in that car afterwards, and I was jamming to some George Michael on the way home. No doubt about that.
How many times do you think they played Last Christmas in this movie?
I think three. I counted three.
The beginning and at the end, for sure.
Nope, I counted 10 times.
10?
Yeah, like 10 separate occasions where they played it.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, because they did a lot of covers for it. They didn't play specifically George Michael's version, but they played a lot of renditions. Yeah.
Man, Faith's a great song, by the way.
Well, another thing I want to say is that like most of the characters in this were like very fun.
Like
Santa... was awesome, like we said. Both of her parents.
Yeah. Yeah, I like
her sister.
The sister, I mean, that's a little volatile.
The two cops.
I didn't care for the cops as much, honestly.
The homeless men were funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were good.
Santa's still my favorite character in the movie.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I love her.
Easily.
Yeah, I love her.
What else we got on Last Christmas? Anything? Speak now or forever hold your peace.
I thought when the title popped on, I was gonna vomit because I thought it was terrible. When that title, I was like, okay, they literally just ripped that out of a Hallmark movie.
I'm telling you, the first like 30-40 minutes of this movie, I was just a little unsure how I felt about it, and then right at the end there, I was just like, as soon as the movie finished, I was like, yep, nah, I liked it.
Okay, so this is Nick's sixth sense, I guess is what we can say. It's Nick's sixth sense, and that's okay.
That's hardly fair. That's hardly fair.
Hey, Sixth Sense is a good movie, so.
I cannot wait for the Wattaddies this year.
I'm using my buzzer. Are you kidding me?
It's
loaded. Buzzer for Last Christmas.
Oh,
like
dude.
Everything else.
It's going to be a war zone in here. It really is.
Man, it's going to be a blast. Can't wait for that one. So we're good?
I think we're good.
All right, let's play.
Well, yeah, let's
play a game. How many George Michaels? All right, let's listen to a little bit, shall we? This guy had soul, man.
Yeah.
This guy had soul.
It's good. It's good.
What a talent. What a voice that George Michael was.
When did he die?
I don't get why anyone could complain.
Like maybe 5 years ago.
George Michael music.
He OD'd, right?
Is that what happened? Oh, God.
Okay. All the good ones do.
All the good ones OD.
2016.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, December. He died on Christmas. Yes, that's
what?
Right.
Oh, my God.
I remember that day. I was sitting at my cousin's house, and yeah, George Michael died.
Holy shit.
Fatty liver disease. He had his demons. He had his demons. He lived hard, played hard. Mm-hmm. But, you know, yeah, died at 53.
Damn. All right.
Christmas Day, 2016. Rest in peace.
Holy crap.
No, what I realized though watching the movie is like, you know what? Kind of does have the songbook.
Yeah.
Pretty solid songbook.
Yeah.
I was skeptical at first, all George Michael songs, but pretty good.
It's not bad.
Heal the Pain, good one. All right. How many George Michaels to get to one Drew Carey, or do the inverse? We're talking time of death, net worth of George Michael.
Well, are we
time of death.
We don't know how much. Do you want to tell us how much he's worth?
Well, I'll tell you that Drew Carey is worth $165 million. And the question is...
We're not swapping out Drew Carey. That's what I thought you were doing.
No. Okay, okay. No, we're trying to guess the next.
Yeah, we're going George Michaels against Drew Carey here.
We're guessing George Michael as opposed to Drew Carey.
Okay.
Okay. And I'll take a stab at it first.
Okay.
And I'll say two George Michaels to get to one Drew Carey.
Okay.
That's what I'll say.
And I'll be generous, and I'll say it's one George Michael to get to Drew Carey.
You think it's 1-1?
Yep.
All right. Well, just to fill in the gaps, I'll go on the upper end here.
Okay.
Okay.
Two Drew Careys for one George Michael. How's that?
Okay.
Two Drew Careys.
Yeah. Let's just do it.
$330 million.
Sure.
Okay. All right. All right.
Just knowing that we've rounded out the corners here.
Maybe.
Okay. There's no stakes in this game, so.
These musicians are worth a lot of money, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, also was, like, really big in London, or England, rather. Big Christmas song. Those Wham royalty checks are just rolling in, I'm sure.
There's a lot of money in music, and especially somebody of George Michael's
his estate is
caliber.
His estate has probably had a significant resurgence even now because of like fucking Deadpool and then this. You know?
Oh yeah, I mean, so I wouldn't be shocked if he's worth quite a bit of money though.
All right, here we go. The actual net worth of George Michael, gone too soon, gone before his time. The whitest guy with soul in the world.
Yep, accurate.
$200 million. That means, Adam, you just won this week's edition of... How many George Michaels?
Yeah, I got it again.
All right. You're on a roll these days, man. You haven't lost in like 5 weeks. We may have to ban him again. Yeah,
ooh.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, we may have to ban him again.
I swear to God, I have not been cheating. Not a once.
By the way, we just got a comment on one of our Facebook videos.
Oh, yeah.
From some guy I don't even know. He just commented on our video, "Bro, you're so annoying."
Who said that?
Which one?
To the Joe Pesci.
Oh, well, there's two of us. So who's more annoying?
I don't know. He didn't say. I just.
Oh, shit. Just bro. Who's the bro?
Well, I'm definitely a bro, but you're definitely you guys more can annoying. Duke it out. So, that's I mean, true. That's, that's quite a conundrum.
Ooh, this is an excellent
point. Might say the reverse on that.
All right. That's it. That's a podcast. Ton of fun as always. Christmas time. Man, what a time.
Mm-hmm. Not so bad.
Gotta love the season.
We're not done yet.
No, we're not.
Oh, not even close.
No.
Oh, my God.
So, Joe DeFeo sent me like three more movies that we should do.
Oh, no. Not Joe. Not Joe movies.
For
so,
Christmas?
I want to try to squeeze in one more in addition to the one we're doing here. I don't know when we'll have a chance. We'll see. Maybe we might
challenge.
Not. Maybe we'll do one after Christmas. I'll talk to you guys. But next week, we have to do another contemporary film available to stream now on Netflix. A Christmas Prince 3: The Royal Baby.
Did you guys see the tweet I sent you?
No.
David Ferrier of Dark Tourist tweeted, I believe he tweeted, "A Christmas Prince 3 is so horny."
Oh my.
What? And that's all he said.
Oh my.
It's the movie is horny?
Let me find the exact wording. Yeah, A Christmas Prince 3 is so horny, from David Ferrier of Dark Tourist fame.
How can the movie be horny?
And from Tickled fame.
Does the movie make you horny?
He just says it's so horny and moves on. And I think that is the... I've never been more excited.
All right, so I'm expecting an extensive sex scene at the very beginning, which leads to...
the conception of the baby?
Yes.
Yeah, I hope they show us the conception. Ooh, yeah. A royal conception.
The royal conception. Oh my God.
A Christmas Prince, the royal coitus. Oh shit.
God.
All right. That's next
week. Do you think
week.
That's what Prince Andrew called it? Or?
Oh.
Oh.
Too soon.
Apparently not soon enough.
I was just
maybe,
about
maybe
to
like
say
10
that.
Years ago, that would have been better.
Not soon enough. All right.
I don't think he gets a statute of limitations at this point. I don't know. I disagree with you there.
Oh God.
Wow.
What a piece of shit. All right. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Everyone. And until next time, you guys have been so very, very naughty. Christmas Prince next week.
Shut up and sit down.